Welcome to the teaching ministry of Pastors Carl and Cheryl Thomas. Our favorite verse is Habakkuk 2:14, "For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." Consumed by that revelation, we are committed to recognizing, resourcing, and releasing high-impact ministries resulting in global glory, transforming lives to impact their world. We have a teaching that will impact you today. Now, let's get right into that word.
And I'm like, nah, I just think I'll just stay sick. And so about that time, I was texting Pastor Carl, and it was kind of crazy because I had so many wires all over my chest. I felt like Frankenstein in an electrician's convention. I mean, it was just like all wires all over the place. And so texting Pastor Carl, and he goes, "Oh, by the way, can you preach on Sunday?" I'm all wired up, and the monitors are freaking out and all over this. And then, "By the way, can you preach on Sunday?" I'm like, yeah, sure. Can I just get out of here? And so it was a crazy week. And then on Thursday, I had one of the coolest guys that I really have ever met, which was really an inspiration for this message this morning. And we went to the Holy Cross High School football banquet, of which one of your own, Micah, with over 600 yards in rushing, got Offensive Player of the Year. And so that was awesome. But I met this young guy, David Lee. David Lee is a defensive end number 91 for the Toronto Argonauts, Grey Cup champions. His dad is Pastor Mike Lee here in town. And Mike just began to share his story of how he graduated from Lucas, played football at Lucas, really was just one of the smallest guys on the squad. But as he began to get into his 10th and 11th and 12th grade years, he began to excel to the point that he got the, some major award, football player of the city type of award, very prestigious award, and in his senior year. And then he was sought after by many colleges and universities, you know, around the nation and down in the States. And he finally settled in on Western. So he goes to Western, and very much like most of us who played high school football, where, you know, we were all that and then some, and then we go to university and we're nothing, you know. So he was like the big cheese, the big fish in a little pond. And he goes over to Western and finds out now that he's just a very small fish in a great big pond. But he had every excuse under the sun why he would not succeed. And so he goes on to Western, and he gets redshirted his first year, which means they weren't going to allow him to play. He gets into his freshman year, his sophomore year. All of a sudden, he starts to develop. He was nothing more than like 6'2", 180-something pounds. But by the time he finished Western, he ended up being 6'2", 260 pounds. So how much strength and conditioning can make you bigger? And so he got just a tad bit bigger. Well, all of a sudden, he was like the top of the recruiting for some of the NFL or the CFL teams, and they were saying, you know, you need to come here and play ball with us, and he was getting all excited about that. And all of a sudden, when CFL draft day came by, then all of the teams that said they wanted him never called. So he was somewhat devastated and deflated, and just decided that, well, I guess this is the end of it. I had a great college career. He goes off and does some landscaping, and while he was doing landscaping, his father gets a phone call from the president of the Toronto Argonauts and says, "Hey, I'd like you to come and do a combine. Basically, I want you to come and try out." Well, that just so excited David, you know, that he started working out a little bit more and went to the combine, and he wasn't a great big huge guy. He really wasn't that much bigger than, you know, myself, except for, obviously, the muscles. And but he gets in there, and he just blew past the whole guy, all of them. And one big, huge offensive lineman, he said he literally picked David up at 6'2", 260 pounds, and just pile-drived him into the ground. Well, his friend said to him, "You know what? You need to retaliate. You need to pick a fight. You need to gain, you know, the respect of all these CFL football players." But it was totally against, you know, David's upbringing. And he said, "You know what? I'm just going to kind of trust the Lord, and God's going to put me in a position where I need to be." Well, all of a sudden, when, you know, he was supposed to go to the back of the line, and he said, "No, I want to be at the front of the line. I want to go against the same guy that pile-drived me." And all of a sudden, I can think of him now, you know, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." And all of a sudden, he said he took that offensive lineman and he literally pancaked him into the ground and gained the respect of everybody. Not only did he pass the combine, but he made it as a defensive end on the Toronto Argonauts, and he went from Lucas High School all the way through Western and then all the way through a summer combine, playing his very first year with the Toronto Argonauts, and now he has a Grey Cup ring. Why? Because I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. So this morning, I want to talk a little bit about that whole inspiration this week on believe that the I Am says that I can. You know, there's some young people, some little babies, that they grab this concept right away. And they really believe that they can do all things through Christ that strengthens them. Maybe we need to do that this morning, shouldn't we? I can do all things through Christ. You got to raise your fist, Raylene. Justin, I know you can raise your fist. I can do all things, Megan. I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. I love this little character. Success. That looks like a little Irish guy. Maybe a little Scottish guy that has just a little bit of an attitude. To say, oh, I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. One of my favorite men of the past is John Wesley. John Wesley had in his rules of conduct, he said, do all the good you can by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. You can do what? You can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. You believe that this morning? You can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. You know, this morning I want to, if you don't mind, this message will be riddled with all sorts of questions. Because no matter how you slice it, those who are here this morning or those who are watching online, you know, that when God gives us a command or God gives us something that He would like us to do, how many know that the very first thing that comes into our mind typically is a question? Why? It is a question, how come? And it seems like, you know, that our lives are full of excuses, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, Moses and some of the things that he went through. But here are some of the questions that if you have not, addressed these at one point or another, then you might. But what is keeping you from believing? What is keeping us from believing as a church? What is keeping your friends from believing? What is holding you back? What is holding me back? What is holding the church back? What is holding all of everybody back from believing that I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me? What adversities are staring you down in the face today that are holding you back and saying you can't do all things through Christ that strengthens you? Think about it. What are the hurdles that you must leap over? What are some of the hurdles that we must leap over as a church? What are some of the hurdles that your friends must leap over? You know, but you got to realize, what are these things that are holding us back? What are the things that are preventing us from saying, I can do all things through Christ that strengthens us? Who is going to pull you through? Who's going to pull us through? Who's going to pull Impact Church through? Who's going to pull your friends through? Who will carry you on your back when you can't walk? Yeah. Who's going to carry you when you feel like you just want to throw in the towel? Who's going to carry you when you just feel like, I can't do it anymore? The good news is, you can do all things through Christ that strengthens you. Who will speak up for you when you can't whisper? Who's going to speak up for Impact Church when we can't whisper? Who's going to speak up for Pastor Cheryl and I, you know, when somebody seems to take away our thunder and take away our voice? I can do all things through Christ that strengthens us. Who will pick up your baton and help you win? Work with me. Who's going to pick up the baton for this church when people say, it can't be done, it won't be done. You know, you guys are too radical, you're too crazy, you're just too out there. The good news today is that we can do all things through Christ that strengthens us. I love what Stephen Gagwa says. He says, try and fail, but don't fail to try. So the bottom line here today is this. There should be nothing that can hold us back. Why? Because we can do all things through Christ. You'll get it if I say this 20 times more. We can do all things through Christ that strengthens us. I love that. Why? Because let us not grow weary in well-doing. Because we all will reap if we faint not. And if we faint not, then you can do all things through Christ. You'll get it eventually. Through strength, whatever it says. I can't even get it. We've got to realize that the distance we've walked until you take a look around, you won't realize the distance you've walked until you look around and realize how far you've come. When we look around now and we've got a great crowd this morning, how many remember when the crowd wasn't so big? How many remember when, you know, when we were saying, you know, Vision 300 or Impact 300? Well, let's just impact ourselves first. But then we look around and we see, you know, the impact that we are making around the city and the impact that we are making with, you know, Aberdeen and the impact that we're making on Dundas and the impact that we're making in the heating rooms. When you look around and you see how far we've come, then you realize, guess what? Impact Church can do all things through Christ that strengthens us. You see, it's been said that men can live 40 days without food, 3 days without water, 8 minutes without air, but only 1 second without hope. But how many realize when you and I had just an ounce of hope, that's just enough to believe that I can do all things through Christ, come on, that strengthens me. So today we're going to talk a little bit about Moses. Moses is a young man who went from the basket to bravery. And as I was studying this whole message this week and the whole life of Moses, not that I didn't know what it was about before, but I came to realize this, that we need to pay attention to any generation that's attacked in its infancy. And it is through adversity that some of the greatest leaders are born. Because you know why? They go from can't to can. They go from try to do. They go from might to win. They go from maybe to victory. Are you getting my point here today? That God can do all things through us. We can do all things through Christ that strengthens us. You can do it all. Every bit of it. There's nothing that'll ever hold us back. And it brings me back to this crazy story of Moses and Goshen. Goshen was the place of comfort and ease for the tribe of Israel. There was great prosperity back then and privilege in Egypt. But something happened because 400 years after the rule of Joseph, Goshen was no longer this pleasure paradise. All of a sudden now it becomes a slave camp. And as Moses grew older, he began to take a very personal interest in the suffering of the children of Israel. Moses actually made it his business to go out to Goshen and to talk with the slaving Jews and try to alleviate their troubles and ease their hardship and the pain as much as possible. But often he would actually put his hands and sometimes his shoulders to work to ease the burden of some of the aged Hebrews at the time. And through the influence with Pharaoh, who appreciated and esteemed Moses' wisdom, he was able to get some effective measures to try to calm the situation down. Moses, as he began to grow through Exodus chapter 2 through 4, Moses, now a seasoned young man, had adopted some of the Pharaoh's family, or was adopted by the son of Pharaoh. And he enjoyed some of the perks, and he enjoyed some of the privileges. He enjoyed all of this stuff. He enjoyed the Egyptian royalty. But all of a sudden, now it didn't really matter anymore. Because now Moses really didn't care about his past, because God was engaging him in the present to change the future. And all of a sudden, Moses comes along and he realizes now that he has a higher calling on his life. He's willing to sacrifice the temporal for the eternal. Moses is about to become an instrument of change. Why? Because he believed, even though it wasn't prophesied to him at the time, he believed that he could do all things through Christ that strengthened him. One day, Moses went to Goshen to bring hope and courage to his fellow Jews, and they appreciated his friendliness and the help that he could give them. And they were astonished at his keen mind and his readiness with what he had learned and mastered the knowledge of the holy teachings of the Levites. So all of a sudden, he sees, you know, what has taken place. He sees abuse in the camp. And one of the guys came up to him and he said, you know, who made you chief and judge over us? Perhaps you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian. But all of a sudden, in the midst of all of the accusation, in the midst of all the situation and the circumstance where he could have thrown in the towel, he could have ran away. Something was developing in Moses, something that literally changed him from the inside out, from where he was and just lashing out and attacking out of protection, if you will. He realized that character was being developed in him. Why? Because how many know that in the midst of adversity, then character is developed. Something begins to take place. Character is always revealed. I'm sorry, character is always revealed the greatest in the midst of adversity. Obedience is always given a chance to retreat in the midst of adversity. How many of you would echo that? Adversity. Faith is always challenged by fear in the midst of adversity. And trust is always questioned in the midst of adversity. And crisis always occurs at the point of change in the midst of adversity. So don't ever rebuke adversity. Don't ever look at it and going, this can't be from God. Because God has a way of using adversity to strengthen you and I and encourage you and I and lift us up when we feel like throwing in the towel. Not that any of you have ever felt like throwing in the towel. Not like any of you have felt like quitting and giving up. Because I love the one of the songs that Atlanta did today about pursuing His presence. Because how many of you know that, you know, sometimes in the midst of adversity, it is during that time that God grabs your attention just a little bit more. Trust me, if you've got wires plastered all over your chest and the monitor's freaking out, then, you know, God's got your attention just a little bit more. And I was thinking as I was laying on the hospital bed, I was like, okay, God, you know, you probably could have grabbed my attention just a little bit more, but now that you got it, it's good. I got it. But the fact of the matter is this, you know, when we were going through all this stuff this week, I said, God, you know, I just need you even more. I mean, it's one thing to believe that I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. I got that. But how many realize, you know, strength is awesome and it's fantastic, but His presence at times is more important than His strength. Because sometimes you get strength out of His presence. And so I said, God, let's do something kind of crazy. So I put together something on my Facebook page. Some of you have seen it. And it's called 40 Days on the Mountain. And really, it's just a 40-day concentrated time of being in the presence of the Lord, which we would probably all adhere to that anyway, regularly. You know, but I thought, you know, let's do something kind of crazy. And so I said, you know, what is it that I'm willing to give up for 40 days, you know, and take the time that I would have been doing X to spending time with the Lord just a little bit more. So for me, you know, it was TV. So, but the problem with this is, like, tonight is the Country Music Awards. And this afternoon is Martinsville NASCAR. And then tomorrow night is the finals of March Madness. And then, of course, there's American Idol and The Voice. And Bayou Billionaires and Blank Dynasty, in case Pastor Carl's watching. Quack, quack. All these kind of things that I really love watching. And I'm like, oh my goodness, do I really have to? And so I told some of the kids the other day, I said, I tell you what, it's supposed to start today, but can we do it Tuesday? And I'm thinking about all this, and it's driving me nuts because I'm thinking, what if I give it up and I start Tuesday, what could be happening between Sunday and Monday that I'm going to miss out from the Lord that is way more important than I'm going to miss from the Country Music Awards or NASCAR? Because the bottom line is, it doesn't really matter if I watch it or not. I'm not going to change the outcome of the race. If I watch the Country Music Awards, it didn't say that I can't see the results on CNN tomorrow. But the fact of the matter is that God is stirring something on the inside. And the very time that I feel that I'm weak and I can't do it, and that the temptation is way too much to watch, then I've got to go back to I can do all things through Christ. Come on. That strengthens me. I love that. So here we are, the purpose behind the message. We find it in Exodus chapter 3. We won't read it, but, you know, we find out that Moses is just riddled with all sorts of excuses. But in Exodus chapter 3, verse 10, it says, "Come now, therefore, and I will send to you Pharaoh, that you may bring forth my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." And here lies the call, if you will, of "you can." And here it is, right in that verse, that God is saying, "Come, I'm going to send you to Pharaoh." Here's the call, but now here lies the excuse of "I can't" in verse 11. And Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And here lies the commission of the call that cancels the "I can't." That when God is for you, who can be against you? When you realize that God is for you, guys, then you realize that "I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me." In verse 12, God said, "I will surely be with you." The "I am" said, "You can." Get it? The "I am" said, "You can," so that you will do. When God says it can happen, be rest assured that it can happen. Be rest assured that it will happen. And be rest assured that it doesn't matter what excuse comes your way or what the enemy impregnates in your mind. How many know the devil's the only one you can tell where to go and get away with it? Come on. Word. Like Peter, God looked below the surface and beyond the obvious. God was preparing Moses for such a time as this. And might I add that before you can step into the "I will," you first must embrace the "I am" that says you can do all things through me that strengthens you. It's amazing. The thing that made Moses the same as us were his weaknesses. And we have them. The same weak excuses are the same ones that the enemy uses to assault you and I every day. And I told you that this message would be riddled with questions, and one of the questions that has to be addressed today is, what kept Moses in a private prison of insecurity? Well, the answers to that are very simple. Number one, that he questioned his own identity. He didn't even know who he was at the time. He questioned his own awareness. Am I a Jew or am I Egyptian? Where am I from? What side of the tracks am I on? Am I royalty? Am I poverty? You know, who am I? He questioned his own position of, am I royalty or am I a refugee? He didn't even know where to fit in half the time. Where do I fit? Am I rich or am I poor? He questioned his own purpose. You know, like, why am I here? Have you ever done that? I know you have. Just raise your hand. Why am I here? You know, what's my purpose? What reason do I have to get up in the morning? Think about it. I have to ask myself all the time, both in business and both in ministry. You know, what is it that motivates me to wake up in the morning? Is it breath? Wrong motivation. Is it prosperity? Wrong motivation. What is it that motivates you? What is your why? Why do you get up in the morning? What drives you? He even questioned God. Who are you? I've never even met you face to face until the "I am" revealed himself to Moses. But how many realize that we've always said before that, you know, desperate times demand desperate actions. And there may come a time when you have to have a face-to-face encounter with the great "I am." And when you have a face-to-face encounter with the great "I am," I can promise you, you'll never question, you'll never come up with an excuse again, because all of a sudden the "I am" will become a living reality to you, and then you can stand up every day and realize that you can do all things through Christ that strengthens you. Sometimes, matter of fact, I think Dr. Seuss put it over here. Dr. Seuss, you know, we all have to count on that. Dr. Seuss says, sometimes the questions are complicated and the answers are simple. C.S. Lewis puts it best. He says, we're not necessarily doubting that God will do the best for us. We're wondering how painful the best will turn out to be. Because we all want the best, but we certainly don't want it to cost us anything. Moses is going through this whole list of excuses, and let me just give you a few of them today. Excuse number one, we're not going to read it all today, but it's really found in Exodus 3, verse 11, all the way down through Exodus chapter 4, verse 17. Excuse number one was, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And that was a relatively good question because Moses had been herding sheep for 40 years. And the thought of a shepherd whom Egyptians despised going to speak to a king was really contrary to the usual protocol. But God's reply simply was, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I that have sent you. That when you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. And I loved all of that because not only did God promise his presence, he gave Moses assurance that the mission would be successful. Even in the presence of an earthly king, he had no cause to fear or to feel inferior. But Moses didn't quite see it that way, did he? Because all of a sudden, here comes excuse number two. He says in verse 13, suppose I go to the Israelites and they say to me, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, well, what is his name? Then what am I going to tell them? Another good question. He said, if you're going to tell a group of hundreds of thousands of people, listen to this, that you've been asked to lead in their deliverance, it would be really helpful for you to have the name of the person to whom you've got the authority from. Moses didn't even realize that at the time, but God's reply simply was, I am that I am. Why? Because the Jews always recognized I am as the name that God distinguished the true God from false God. They realized when he said, I am that I am has sent me, that all of a sudden, you know, it was all good. But the crazy thing about it is they all recognized that God sent him, but he didn't even realize that God sent him. Because all of a sudden, here it comes again. He comes up with a third excuse. And the excuse was, well, what if they don't believe me? Or what if they don't even listen to me in Exodus chapter 4? Well, the crazy thing about this is that God had assured Moses that the leaders of the people would listen to him. And it is becoming quite apparent that Moses is not a willing subject at this time. Do you get that? But God knew that Moses' faith still needed to be strengthened. So what did the Lord do? The Lord worked through Moses and he turned a staff or a rod into a snake to make Moses' hand leprous, and then he healed it and to turn water into blood. And I was reading the story this week and something just kind of dawned on me that the staff really was the rod of confidence for Moses. The staff became the voice of the Lord through a voice of weakness. That God will use whatever he has to use to encourage you. If he has to use a rod, he'll use a rod. If he has to use adversity, sometimes he'll use adversity. But God sees the big picture, guys. It would be like if I was in front of a parade and I can see the parade coming through me at ground level on a sidewalk, I can just see what comes in front of me. But all of a sudden, if I come up on top of a building, I can almost see the beginning from the end. I get the big picture. Hear me. Whatever scenario and whatever situation that you're going through, God has the bigger picture. And he looks at the bigger picture and he looks at you in the middle of the picture and he's whispering, and sometimes he has to yell and sometimes he has to go even a little bit louder. He says, you can do all things through me. I will strengthen you. And in the midst of all of that, sometimes you're like, is that really you? I know none of you have ever asked or question God that way. Is it really you? When we planted a church in Mount Bridges, oh God, is that really you? I've never even pastored before, much less plant a church. And then through the first 2 years of it, God, is that really you? But we knew that it was. Because let me just go down a little bunny trail. Some people say, well, it lasted 2 years and then you had a change. To me, it never closed. We just transitioned. You can look at this however way you want to look at it. You can look at it in the temporal and go on and whine about it and complain about it and come with every excuse. Oh, we did this and we did that. And they sacrificed. And I had to preach every week. And I had to come up with a Wednesday night Bible study. And I do all this stuff. 12 people. What a waste of time that was. I got to put my money somewhere else, God. Why did you have me put it here with these people? And I could have been bitter. I could have been barking. I could have been complaining. And I was. But in the midst of all of that, I looked at it as things began to transition. And I said, you know what? You've done so much in me. You've done so much in our family. You've really done so much in this region. Because sometimes we want to see instant results so fast. And I'm wired that. You know, I'm wired that way. I want to see revival before we pray. Pastor comes up. Bobby, you do think? He goes, Bobby, do you think you get, boom, done? He goes, have you ever thought to figure this out? Like Pastor Cheryl would. She's the methodical one, the administrator. And I'm like, no, you just wanted it done. Here it is. But that's how I'm wired. Maybe that's why I'm in the hospital so much. My wires are crossed. Excuses. Don't we often wish that God would show us supernatural signs and then we'd promise to trust and obey after that? Sometimes we feel like His word, written and spoken, is not enough. And you think Moses would come along and say, okay, Egypt, here we come. Well, that's not quite exactly what he's... Because in verse 10, here's excuse number 4. Oh Lord, I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow to speech and tongue. And in the light of everything that has already taken place, this is so crazy. That God has promised Moses His company. He's assured him of the success of his mission. He has provided him with miraculous signs. Moses still being, you know, reluctant is, or his reluctance was not a sign of humility or even a recognition of his own inabilities. But get this, his reluctance revealed his lack of trust in God's ability. Because Moses at the time didn't believe that God can do, or that he could do all things through Christ that strengthened him. Because he kept looking at his weaknesses. He kept looking at his frailties. He kept looking at his excuses. He kept bowing down to his reasons not to, instead of embracing the I can do all things. You see, when we refuse to join God in His work, we are revealing a distrust of His ability to work in us. And God's word is full of promises and assurances of His presence and His ability to work in us. And we need to just simply take Him at His words. And God simply responds. He said, who gave man his mouth? Who makes him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight or makes him blind? It is not I, the Lord. Now go, and I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say. I was reading that the other day, and I know it's kind of a weird illustration, but the only thing that I can think of was the Wizard of Oz. And the cowardly lion was like Moses. And you know, the wizard is in there. I am the great and powerful Oz. Now go! And the lion freaks out and runs for his life. I mean, realize, you ever think that God sometimes gets a tad bit frustrated? After He goes, you can do it. You can do it. Aaron, you can do it. Raylene, you can do it. They're getting married in a few short weeks. You can do it. And they asked me to marry them. I'm not going. And she goes, you will do it. God, it gets so gentle sometimes. But do you ever think for a moment that He gets a little impatient? And finally He has to yell something at you? You can do it. You can do all things through me. I don't want to hear your excuses. Now go. Now I know some of you grace people, you'd be like, well, you wouldn't quite say it that way. Maybe not to you, but to me He needs to say it that way. Now start that church. Yes, sir. See, I was in the military in the States, and I understand, you know, when people yell at me and get all up in my grill, then to me that is, you can do it. Others might get winged out about all that. But he was full of lack. He was like, Moses was like the king of excuses and lack. His lack of self-awareness, if you will. But 1 Thessalonians 5 and 6 says, let us be alert and self-controlled. He had a lack of knowing God, but Psalm 46:10 says, "Be still and know that I am God." He had a lack of trust, but Psalm 125:1-2 says, "Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be shaken, but endures forever. And just as the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord will surround and protect his people both now and forevermore." Why? Because you can do all things through Christ that strengthens you. He had a lack of self-confidence, but Proverbs 3:26 says, "For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being snared." He had a lack of courage, but Joshua 1:6, three times says, "Be strong and be courageous. Be strong and be very courageous." In fact, if you don't believe it, the first two times that I've said it, be strong and very, very courageous, because I'm going to be with you. I'm going to guide you. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to be there for you. You got to understand Moses' dilemma in the wilderness, because for 40 years, imagine what he was feeling. Imagine, if you will, around and around and around and around. And he's thinking, what will my people think? What will it cost me? What's in it for me? What will I lose? I'm going to lose my life. God, get somebody else. You don't understand. I'm scared. What about my family and kids? What about my security? What about my name? With each excuse, God's promises were always true. It doesn't matter what you're going through. With every excuse that we come up today, guys, God's promises are always true. That he'll always be with you. He'll never leave you. He'll never forsake you. He'll never leave you orphaned. He'll never leave you abandoned. He'll never leave you by yourself. Excuses, Stephen Graham says, are the tools with which persons with no purpose in view build for themselves great monuments of nothing. Edward Murrow says, "Difficulty is the excuse history never accepts." You and I need to develop an infinite capacity to ignore what others say can't be done. We need to distance ourselves from the powders and the doubters and the do-withouters, and mount and move in faith comes from a decision of, "I can." Why? Because faith moves the mountains that doubt creates. Excuses are discounted but never discontinued, and God wants to execute the excuses today. Period. Why? Because I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. I love that. So what does he promise? What does God promise Moses? Well, as we wrap this up, because I'm getting extremely hungry, God promises his presence. That you don't climb mountains all by yourself. That the success of Moses was that he learned to rely on the presence of God. That he eventually knew his weaknesses and accepted God's strength, and he realized that he couldn't do it all by himself. That God said, "I will be with you." Now, some of you have seen this before, I've heard about this before, but this is an actual story. Well, not like this wasn't, but this is an actual story. The story of a bricklayer who tried to move about 500 pounds of bricks from the top of a four-story building to the sidewalk below. The problem was that he tried to do it all by himself. And these were his own words taken from an insurance form. This is nuts. He says, quote, "It would have taken too long to carry the bricks down by hand, so I decided to put them in a barrel and lower them by a pulley, which I had fastened to the top of the building. After tying the rope securely at the ground level, I then went to the top of the building." I can think of like Jeff Dunham and Walter telling his story. "I fastened the rope around the barrel, loading it with bricks, and swung it out over the sidewalk for the descent. Then I went down to the sidewalk and untied the rope, holding it securely to guide the barrel down slowly." I almost think of Bill Cosby talking about Jell-O pudding pops doing this story. "But since I weigh only 140 pounds, The 500-pound load jerked me from the ground so fast that I didn't have time to think of letting go of the rope. So as I passed between the second and third floors, I met the barrel coming down. Thus accounts for the bruises and lacerations on my upper body. I held tightly to the rope until I reached the top where my hand became jammed in the pulley. This accounts for the broken thumb. At the same time, however, the barrel hit the sidewalk with such a bang and the bottom fell out. Now, with the weight of the bricks gone, the barrel only weighed 40 pounds. Thus, my 140-pound body began a swift descent, and I met the empty barrel coming up. This accounts for the broken ankle. Now, slowly, only slightly, I continued the descent and landed on the pile of bricks. This accounts for my sprained back and broken collarbone. At this point, I lost my presence of mind, like he didn't lose it before, but I lost my presence of mind completely, and I let go of the rope. Sounds like something we should do on Tuesday night at Best Western. I lost my presence of mind completely, and I let go of the rope, and the empty barrel came crashing down on me. This accounts for my head injuries. As for the last question on the form, what would you do if the same situation arose again? He said, please be advised that I am finished trying to do the job alone. So God's presence will be with you all the time. You don't go anywhere in your name or the name of this church, but you go in the name of the great I am. The second thing that God promises is your permission or his permission to speak on his behalf. Because this is what you were to say to the Israelites in Exodus chapter 3 and 14, that I am has sent you. He promises power. This journey is really not about you or I. It's about accomplishing great and mighty exploits, the matchless power that the Lord God grants us through his inheritance. The staff was for Moses. And you see, like Moses, he will tell us what to do, where to go, what to say. All we are required to do is just step out of faith. Power is the inherited ability to perform in the realms of the unknown. It is the inheritance. It is the inherited ability to perform in the realms of the unknown. The power that God promises has sudden, explosive capabilities. So unlike people of the Old Testament, you don't have to carry the power anymore. The power is within you. All you got to do is flip the ignition switch and boom, man, you explode for him wherever you are. Doesn't matter what the excuses are anymore, because now you're going out in his name. He goes on, a couple more. He promises protection when he crossed the sea. He promised partnership. He promises assistance. Like how many times at the end of the day that you hear the voice of the Lord say, if you had just done what I said, I've come alongside of you, but you just pushed me away. So just open your mouth when I tell you and just trust me. God's calling you and I to greatness every single day. He really is. The last thing is he promises his provision. That God will always provide an errand for you. Because the last excuse that Moses said was, can you use somebody else? I really don't want to do the job anyway, but thanks for the thought. Even though I know you're going to be with me, even though I know you got protection and power and all that, Moses still was full of inadequacy. He was still full of insecurity. And then God says, how about Aaron? And all of a sudden, God still used Aaron, and God still used Moses too. And they partnered together to get the job done. I love that. God calls each and every one of us to greatness. And the I Am says that you can, and he calls you by name. Listen to this. He calls you by name to reaffirm his position in you. Get that? He calls you by name to reaffirm the position in you. That even with all of the encouragement, Moses was still like, I don't get it. But you got to understand something here today. Be yourself. Be nobody else. Be faithful in what God has called you to do. And you can't quit. You can't throw in the towel. Because get this, Moses was 40 years old when he killed a soldier. Back in Exodus chapter 3. Then 40 years in Midian. Now he's 80 when he went up to Mount Horeb at the burning bush. Then for 40 years in the wilderness, get this, 120 years old the guy is now. 14,600 days asking God when he was going to show up. So the question is, as we wrap this up, is how much are we missing out because we quit? Look at the incredible stories and the incredible journeys that he went through for 120 years, but none of that would have happened had he thrown in the towel and had he quit. So what can we do? Well, we choose to walk in obedience. We choose to change what keeps you from God's best. You choose in your and you purpose in your heart that you live as victors, that you connect with God, that nothing will separate you from the love of God, and that you commit to his calling and his life. So the last question is this. What excuses are you listening to today? That every command that God gives you requires advance, retreat, or remaining idle. Decisions always determine the direction of your destiny. And with the sound of the music, this message is now over. Atlanta, I want you to come on up and healing team, ministry team, if you will. And let's all stand, if you will. Did you get something out of that today? A little bit? I want you to take your neighbor by the hand, if you will, please. Rule of thumb is to always sneeze in your elbow. Let me just say on behalf of Pastor Carl and Pastor Cheryl, for those of you who are visiting here for the very first time, we honor you. We're really thrilled and excited that you have spent this hour or a couple hours with us and that you actually put up with me for about 45 minutes to an hour. This is not the norm. The real pastor will be here next week. But you know what? We have excuses that we come up with all the time. Excuses and questions. And as you have your neighbor by the hand, I want to ask you this question. What good reason do people have to not follow Christ? Whatever the answers are, they're all excuses. Well, I don't believe. I don't think. I had one lady I asked to come to church. She says, I can't. I'm Catholic. I'm like, said, my parents would be upset. I'm not asking you to quit your Catholic church. I'm asking you to just come visit us. He said, oh, no, I can't do that. I'm like, we don't have cooties. I'm like, and I said, besides, it's Easter. Where are you going anywhere? Anyway, nowhere. I said, wouldn't your parents be more upset if that you weren't going nowhere than if you were going somewhere? And then the next excuse was, well, I had to get dinner ready. I said, well, if you come, you can find the secret from about 300 people who have found a way to get their dinner in the oven, time it, so that when we get done with church, then it'll be ready in time. Well, I can't do that because my oven doesn't have a timer on it. Well, why don't your husband go and get you a new oven? Well, we can't because we don't have the funds to do that. And it just, you're peeling off one excuse after another. And when it finally got down to it, it was really The answer was this: I had different spiritual beliefs now. I'm like, well, why don't you say that 35 minutes ago? Then I could have said it's still another excuse. The bottom line is this: if we were standing at the gate of heaven and God asked another question, why should I let you in? What would you say? As you have your neighbor by the hand, I want you to ask your neighbor a very important question. This is not a deep theological question. You don't need a Greek dictionary. You don't need to go to, you know, wherever she's going to study Hebrew or whatever, you know, that school. Here's the question. Are you absolutely sure your life is right with God? Is there covered up unrepented sin? Do you know beyond a shadow of a doubt, well, throwing away all the excuses, am I right? And you know how you know if you are? If we could just line up, if we could have the Ten Commandments line up, if we just had the Ten Commandments right there, and then we walked in front of that, would we line up? That's how you know. And then you find out that you don't. And then you find out that sometimes I don't either. And then you find out, we're all in the same boat. But isn't it amazing when you feel like quitting, and when you feel like your boat is about to sink and become the first convertible submarine of 2013, you know, that you think, well, holy cow, we're all in the same boat. But the difference is this, is that we realize Jesus has this incredible way to pump out the water and to keep us alive and to keep us afloat. Jesus is not, you know, he's not a crutch. He's my life support system. Hook me up, Jesus. Wire me up. I'm good. You are my life support system, because without Jesus, life is hell.